Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:59 PM, that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 26th. I thought we'd kick off today with China's repo rates because they jumped 27 basis points, which is about 10% but of what it had been yesterday. But I think the bigger picture here is that it's gone up over 200 basis points since the end of last year. So when we think about what exactly is going on, well, China's economy hasn't had the same kind of difficulties as anywhere else because they went into total lockdown. And of course, that came at the expense of living conditions, human rights, and all manner of other factors. But the reality is that the one thing that they did rescue was the economy. So when we then think about, well, what kind of monetary policy or fiscal policy that they are now beginning to look at, well, the last thing they want is a bubble. And that is, of course, on the back of property prices that have been rising for decades and have never really had a correction. So the one thing that China's policymakers are most afraid of is a property market crash. That's the kind of thing that could bring down a government in China because everybody's long. It's not the same thing for bonds or equities. Equities tend to be more of an outlet for speculative interest, but the foundation of the vast majority of people's investments are in property. Now, the repo rate is up to levels we haven't seen in the last few years, around the 300 basis point level. We haven't really seen it move above 300 basis points for at least the last 5 years. And even then, we have to go all the way back to times in the immediate aftermath of the credit crisis to see that a time when the repo rate was above 400 basis points. And even then, it didn't spend very much time up there. So one thing we can think about is that China is engaged in what might be perceived as normal fiscal monetary accommodation, that they loosened up during the worst of the pandemic. Now that the pandemic is ebbing and vaccines are being rolled out, then they don't quite need the same degree of accommodation, so they're starting to withdraw it. And they are also now looking at the kind of speculative interest that has seen a number of shares running way ahead. One, obviously, that has benefited from the demand for green energy is BYD. It's gone from 50 to 250 since March of last year in Hong Kong, so up five times is a pretty impressive move. Great Wall Motors has pretty much gone vertical over the same period as well, and it's also been among the best performers over the last 12 months. But even here, we can also see that there's been some pause and consolidation. Tencent, which had really popped on the upside earlier in the week, pulled back a little in here today. So it's leaving a long tail on the weekly chart. What it suggests is we may be looking at some consolidation coming through. The People's Bank of China was very swift to say that they are not going to remove all of the stimulus. So this is just something to damp the brakes on speculation. Now, we don't have any evidence that any other central bank in the world is willing to do that. And then it's probably also worth monitoring some of these Chinese instruments to give us some indication of how extraordinarily high valuated companies are going to perform against a background where repo rates can move higher, where bond yields have been trending higher since March of this year. China offers some of the highest yields of any major economy at about 3.1%, but that yield is bouncing now from the region of the trend mean. So there is nothing to say that we're not going to see additional upside. And that is also consistent with a recovering economy overall. And then that also is helping to strengthen the renminbi. It has had a rivetingly consistent trend against the dollar, and this is a staircase, step sequence downtrend for the dollar. It hasn't been able to sustain a move above 6.5, and all other factors being equal, we can anticipate that this trend of depreciation of the dollar will persist. The dollar, having rallied yesterday, was weaker in here today, so coming back down to test the 90 area in the dollar index. The reality remains that no other country seems to be quite as willing as the USA to engage in fiscal profligacy. So the euro continues to steady from around the 120 area. It has held its breakout. And this doesn't look like anything other than just an orderly consolidation. Now, when we think about what's going on Wall Street, well, one thing that we do, I think, need to pay attention to is that this very orderly advance that we've had since November, with every little reaction rebounding in an impressive manner, these kinds of very persistent advances don't last indefinitely. We do have a short-term overbought condition relative to the trend mean. The index could pull back to 3,500 and still be above the trend mean. Well, what that suggests is that we're probably getting closer to the next 10% pullback on Wall Street. And against the outlook for monetary and fiscal stimulus, it's probably going to be regarded by the majority of people as a buying opportunity. There's very little prospect of the Federal Reserve announcing any new stimulative measures until we have a clear rationale for why they would do that. So obviously we can then think that the 10-year yield is starting to come back down. It's now right in the region of 100 basis points. When we think about the yield curve spread, I've been preaching to the choir, I think, when looking at the yield curve spread and thinking, well, golly, this can't go much higher without there being some form of resistance. So 100 basis points or 1% has been an area of resistance. 10-year yields are starting to firm and it's coming back towards the 1% level. Well, that is, I think, probably good news for the US government. Good news also for the financial conditions overall, and probably one of the factors in the continued strength of the SPAC index, although the SPAC index has been weak now for 2 days. So every time it has pulled back, it has pulled back by less than 50 points since the low that we had in October. We had three different pullbacks until this week. This one is already more than 50 points. So if it were to take out that 800 level, well, then that would raise the potential that we are moving into a more of a corrective phase, and it might even be something similar to what we saw in September through to the end of October. When we then look at the IPO ETF, it's also been weak over the last 2 days. It hasn't pulled back by nearly the same amount. Well, what this also helps to, I think, clearly demonstrate is that the companies that are IPOing via SPACs, well, they are more levered than those that are IPOing under the normal way of approaching the market. So it's been certainly more levered in terms of performance. But the other point is that the IPO index had popped on the upside yesterday, and now it's on the cusp of failing to sustain the upward break. Now let's go back and look at this trend up from the lows in March. Every time it's broken out, it has come back to test the upper side of the underlying trading range. Then we had a failed upside break in August. It didn't really pull back any further than that, and the sequence of higher reaction lows was maintained. The breakout failed as well in September and came back into the underlying range. And then it did the same thing again in October. So we can certainly think that the period from March through to July was at least more consistent than the second doubling. And it hasn't quite doubled since then. And there has been a tendency for upside breaks to fail. Now, we've also seen that there have been sporadic instances of downside key reversals. They have not been sustained. So these are warning shots across the bow. Now, obviously, when failed upside breaks are characteristic, then people generally tend to become conditioned. So they're not going to respond to the possibility that this might be a peak until the sequence of higher reaction lows is broken. But it's not like the SPAC index and the IPO index exist in parallel universes. They're very closely aligned in the eyes of investors. If the SPAC index does in fact break below 800, well then it is likely to signal the potential that we are moving into more of a corrective phase for some of the biggest bets out there. And that also is what the 10-year yield is telling us, because with the 10-year yield starting to come back down, it means that people are buying it. And if they're buying it, it means the money must be coming out of something. So we've had a lot of people talking about bubbles. And certainly when we think about this extraordinary situation, for example, that is going on in GameStop, the volatility is nothing short of incredible. And the share was up another $70 in here today, or let's put percentages on it, nearly 50%. Well, this is representative of a massive short squeeze. Well, that's possible because large numbers of retail investors are simply buying the shares and pressuring stops. And there's still approximately 100% of the shares outstanding are still borrowed by short sellers. So this is an historic short covering rally. Of course, once it has ended, the share price is going to go all the way back down. There is nothing that has happened to the GameStop business model to justify this incredible advance. But of course, what we might see, and something that we have seen over the course of the last few years, the last 12 months, so let's not exaggerate, has been that when these almost broke companies see these stratospheric moves, then they decide to go to the market and sell more shares. We might see that from GameStop, and it would probably represent the peak. So definitely these are very representative of extraordinary moves that are going on right now. Two of the other shares that are mentioned in the same breath as GameStop are AMC, and that company has secured financing, so at least it is not going to go bust. And now we can think about Bed Bath & Beyond, which has benefited also, and that was also extraordinarily volatile over the last few days, and up 10% in here as well today. So we're seeing extraordinary volatility coming through on a single stock basis, but perhaps not quite so much on the broader basis. Now, volatility is still higher than it was for pretty much all of 2019, but it is quite likely to continue to contract over the medium term if we don't have any big shocks. Now, I do think that eventually we're going to see a rollover in the stock market, that stocks have done really fantastically well. But the other point is that the big companies like Amazon have been going sideways now for, in Amazon's case, more than 6 months. So it is coming back up towards the upper side of the range. These mega caps generally represent large weightings. Apple has so far held this move above the $140 level. Microsoft has also been doing well and is now at a new all-time high. So there is the potential that the mega caps are going to renew their outperformance and start to push higher once more. The majority of fundamental analysts are expecting very positive earnings from the fourth quarter, and I think that's probably justified in view of the stay-at-home nature of the holiday season, that there were a lot of people buying a lot of stuff on online and subscribing to a lot of stay-at-home features. So these companies could certainly have an outsized quarter, and that might be enough to push them up, and that might be why people are buying now. But then we can think about, well, what about the other side of this year? When we are moving progressively into the phasing out of fear about the coronavirus, as we move towards more vaccinations and a clear rationale for why people will begin to feel better. I can also think about the fact that I live in California. There was one of the person in charge of health in Los Angeles was quoted as saying back in September that none of the restrictions would be loosened until after the election. And then the state of California came off of its stay-at-home order, which the vast majority of people were ignoring anyway, today. So it beggars belief that health policy would be so closely aligned with efforts to try and win the election, but that is unfortunately what has happened. So it almost feels like we're living in a parallel universe, but it is the reality. And now they're starting to reevaluate how to use testing, and then there is a much more sanguine attitude among people as vaccines have been brought forward, and now they're starting to change how they measure the incidence of disease. These are bizarre phenomenon in terms of crowd psychology. But by and large, the success of vaccines and the proof of concept for genetics is helping to support this breakout for biotechnology. Then when we think about agriculture, the one thing that very few people are willing to countenance is that one of the biggest threats to the productivity of agriculture is the introduction of a new cash crop. And cannabis is, without the shadow of a doubt, a highly lucrative cash crop. And if we get to a point where the federal government in the USA decides that they are going to remove the federal prohibition, then we're going to see a lot more farmers starting to cultivate cannabis. And the whole saying that it grows like a weed, that is going to be given a whole new meaning. But one thing we can also think about is that soybean prices have broken out of their base, and they firmed nicely today from the 1300 cent level. This is a very clear base formation completion. Now, wheat has not been as emphatic on the upside, but it is also a very clearly defined breakout from a six-year base, and corn prices are doing exactly the same thing. Well, all of these go into feeding other animals. So, and obviously when we've had the swine flu last year, then there's obviously been a massive effort, particularly in China, to rebuild the herd. But that's equally true for feeder cattle, and feeder cattle are starting to steady as well. Live cattle generally tend to be a little more volatile, but it's also firming and coming back up towards the upper side of the range. Now, there is some cyclicality here. We can see that during contract changes, prices do tend to roll over in the first quarter of the year. And that's obviously to do with the slaughter schedule. So the real measure of whether we're back in a demand-dominated environment will be if the recent strength can be sustained. But when we think about 2020, it was a year of plague, and pandemic is only one of them. There was the swine flu and the plague of locusts, and then we had floods in the Midwest in the USA in the spring of last year, which upset the planting season. And then we've had a massive fall off in demand for cattle and beef at the first half of last year, which accelerated the slaughter schedule. And then that it has now got the potential to create a shortage as we move into 2021. So the pandemic's longer term effects are probably going to be most acutely felt in agricultural commodities. Then when we think about how people are accessing this particular trend, well, the Global Agricultural Producers ETF has rebounded emphatically from the lows in March, but then it broke out in November, and it's another one of these that is really very overbought in the short term. Now, if we are going to move into more of a corrective phase, potentially towards the end of this month or into February, then there will be some evidence of dip buying, which will probably mark its end. Considering the fact that we have got an incredibly liquid environment overall, then the bouts of speculative interest tend to move in waves. They don't all come at the same time. The most acute so far have been in green energy, and the solar sector and the wind sector have started to pause over the course of the last few days. And this is another one that has some evidence of a failed upside break. So we're getting some pause and consolidation in some of the most speculative of instruments on Wall Street. And the NASDAQ is not where that is showing up, because the majority of the larger shares have been going sideways for so long. But the Russell 2000 has done spectacularly well, and it is really quite overbought in the short term. Now, when we think about the commodities that haven't been doing less well, oil prices continue to push higher, and this has been a very orderly consolidation over the last 3 weeks. But it's still below the $60 level, and it is really just recouping most of the decline that was put in early 2020. Then gold prices continue to pause here around the region of the trend mean. There is obviously support around the 1800 level, and that's been holding now for the last 6 or 7 weeks. We won't have clear confirmation that we're back in a demand-dominated environment until gold is sustaining a move above $1,950. The one thing that we need to remember about gold is that it is volatile. It's capable of going sideways for prolonged periods, and then when it breaks out, it has explosive moves, and it is best bought following reactions. Well, we're certainly in a reaction right now, and gold shares have been also reasonably steady in the region of $35. I would be personally quite surprised if we see the gold ETF or the gold miners ETF coming back below 30. I think all of this range since August is a first step above the base. And if that's the case, then we're really only in the foothills of a new bull market overall. I think as we are looking at the number of smaller instruments that are exploding on the upside and now beginning to exhibit some weakness, then we're drawing progressively closer to some pause and consolidation. As I said earlier, most people are now worried about a bubble, but that's not how bubbles work. It's generally when people are most worried about a bubble that we don't really have anywhere close to a peak. And that is the most important point about a bubble. Bubbles are when it's easiest to make money. It's when everyone enjoys the party. But there's still a lot of fear being expressed by people, which tells us they're not fully invested. Where we do have some peaking speculative interest is among retail investors, and then only a subset of those retail investors, particularly those that are more tech savvy. Because they're getting their information from chat groups, they're participating with Robinhood apps. So it's generally a younger demographic. Well, of course, the younger demographic has never participated in a big bull market, so this is their first big bull market. Most of them were in their early 20s, before the credit crisis, and it took an awful long time for the millennial generation to have the wherewithal to even begin to participate in a new bull market, and they're now in it in force. But there's still, I believe, a lot of people in cash. And bubbles don't peak until everyone is fully invested, because they are powerfully acquisitive, and the performance eventually drags in people off the sidelines, and everybody wants a piece. And if people are expressing fear about bubbles, well, then it tells us that we're unlikely at the peak at the present time. But we also know what to look for, because when monetary conditions do eventually tighten, well, then that will be a causal factor in the stock markets then beginning to unwind the bubbly valuations. But we're just nowhere near that right now. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.